Unternehmenswerte frisch geröstet. Im Podcast Niggemann to go. Von der 5B-Strategie bis zur Kaffeemethode. Für mehr Gewinn, Erfolg und Zeit. Von und mit Alexander Niggemann, Wirtschaftswissenschaftler, Entscheidungsfinder, Speaker, Autor. Niggemann to go. Alles andere ist kalter Kaffee.
Hello and welcome to a new episode Niggemann to go, the podcast for all entrepreneurs and those who want to become self-employed. Today, an episode in English. Today, a very special interview, and I'm happy that the author, speaker, and entrepreneur has found his way in my studio. He is known for books such as Toilet, Paper, Entrepreneur, Clockwise, Profit First, and The Pemkin Plan. Today, we are talking about his new book, Get Different, and of course, about him and what makes him different from other business writers. Agreed with a warm welcome tune from US, New Jersey, Mike Michalowicz.
Guten Tag.
Welcome to my podcast.
Guten Tag. Guten Abend. It depends what time it is, but thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's great that you are in my podcast today, and I'm looking forward to an exciting interview episode with you.
Thank you.
Niggemann to go. Interview.
At first, Mike, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Sure. So, you know, we were talking prior to the recording. I am an author here in the United States. I have family in Germany. So I'm actually returning next year again to visit family and spend some time in Northern Germany and also Southern Germany. And I'm on a mission in my author career to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. In fact, if you're watching the camera here, I can maybe turn it on my wall. That's the words right there. It's my constant reminder of what I've defined as my life's purpose. And I am out to help entrepreneurs, small business owners, grow successful businesses where they have financial freedom. They don't have to worry about money, where they have personal freedom, where you can do what you want, when you want, and so forth. And the reason this is so important to me is because it's been my own struggle. When I first started my companies, I wasn't making money. I was losing money. When I thought I'd have a business that would be running itself, the reality was I was running crazy trying to run the business. I was working 12 hours a day every day. Mm. And I have to turn that around for myself. Mm. I've done the research and the work to do it. I have turned around for myself. I'm still improving myself. And I write my books as I discover new processes and techniques and share with other entrepreneurs that can benefit from it. Mm. So that's what I am. I'm an author. I've written, you can see those books I have behind me there. I've written now 7 or 8 business books. I have a new one coming out in just a month and another one next year.
Oh, wow. I think it's great that you support small businesses in getting to a good start on the one hand. And I think it's absolutely important to driving the economy and help the self-employee become to good entrepreneurs. Yeah. I also follow such an approach in my 5B strategy. The backbone of the economy, also in Germany, are small and middle-sized companies.
Sure. It's a global economy. So in the United States, 99% of businesses are defined as small business. Mm-hmm. Now, our government defines a small business by a company that does $25 million in U.S. revenue or less. So we'll say 25 million euros. And as I studied the global economy, to your point, it is exactly the same. Almost, actually, every country I visited and studied, small business is the economy. And if small business is struggling, it all struggles. And now today, we are such a globally connected commerce. You know, how Germany performs in the economy affects the United States. How India is performing affects the Netherlands. And you know, all these countries, we're all intermingled.
So yeah, we are all connected. That's
it. We're all connected. So yeah. we need the health of small business to the point where, you know, I'm very vocal about the profitability of small business and how important it is. And some people say, well, that sounds so greedy. It's all about making money. Mm. And my argument is profitability is contribution and stability. Mm. If your business is struggling and you're not making enough money, you won't have the funds to acquire new services that I could provide. Mm. So your challenges cause me to be challenged. We all need to be successful.
Of course.
there's a saying here that as the tide rises, so do all the boats. We want all small business being successful.
So no cash flow. I can't invest in your perfect training.
Right.
Profit first is the backbone. You wrote about it.
That's right.
Well, Mike, let's talk about your current bestseller, Get Different. Even as book, Get Different is completely different from all other business books. And you encourage the reader to interact between the book, the landing page, and other media. Hands on, Mike. What was your motivation for this idea?
So it came from someone outside of the community I work with who said, oh, I have this great idea that I tried in a book, but it isn't in the small business community, and it's been successful. And it's like, wow, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. You know, many ideas are not brand new and have never been done before. Maybe they're new to you. That was new to me, but never been done before. The concept is, and the premise of this book is that for a business to stand out in its marketing, it must do something that is inconsistent, not consistent with how the competition is marketing. Mm-hmm. If I do the same, it's all this messaging that gets blended together and the prospect, the consumer can't see it. They're blind to it. But if I come from, everyone's going here, I come from another angle, the client will notice. So I took this idea from another author with their blessing and said, oh, I'm going to try this in a marketing book because I haven't seen it done before. And it has been a highly engaging, highly different approach for many of our readers. And it's got a new level of engagement I haven't seen before.
It's a blue ocean in a red ocean.
It's a blue ocean. Yeah.
Perfect strategy. Yeah. So in the book, you also write about your previous book and the beginnings. Yeah. And I remember the chapter in which you were writing about that you are sitting on 20,000 copies of your first book and you are looking for a solution to marketing the books. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend to other writers if they come to marketing a good book idea?
Niggemann to go. Black box.
I couldn't believe that I did that, but part of it actually served me. I had my own ignorance. I didn't know that that was unreasonable, but now I was in a situation where I had my own books that I had to sell. It was my only source of income. So it put me in a corner. There was no alternative way to go. So I had to fight my way out and it served me. What I found that's so important is that authors, this is true for any business, the stronger engagement individually with your readers, your consumers, the more likely they're to talk about you. So you have to have a great product. I really hope my books are of great service. And if a reader never connects with me, that they'll feel that they've been served as best as possible. But additionally, when they choose to engage with me, email me or call, if I can engage back with them, that gives me a big advantage. So I've built my author business. We have employees here and so forth, to actively engage with readers, and particularly when they reach out to us. So I think a lot of authors have newsletters and so forth, but that's the common approach. I think what's uncommon is when a reader reaches out and says, your book served me, that they get a message back from me or the team engages with them and embraces them. I have run into people throughout the globe, usually when I'm doing a speaking engagement, who've come to me and said, you know, 4 years ago or X years ago, you sent me a personal video thanking me for writing you about your book, or you sent me a note back. I'll never forget that. That small act of kindness and recognition can last for years, and that person is likely to talk about my books, my products, to other people, and they spread the word for me.
Many out there are saying that books don't work anymore. You prove the opposite.
Niggemann to go, buddies.
Yeah. So I think books can be very effective. I think dollar for dollar value, there's nothing better than the book. Like it is every ounce of my knowledge on a subject and you can buy it for, 20 or 25 euros. I think that is a very good value. But I think the mistake that business owners make is they say, now I have something great, be it a book, be it a service, be it a product, whatever it is, and say, oh, I want everyone to benefit from this. We want everyone to benefit from it, but then we market that way. We try to put a message out that anyone could engage with. The problem is when we try to engage everyone, we have to deliver it through a message that connects with everyone, which actually waters it down. If I'm going to sell something to men and women, I can't talk about, I don't know, it's maybe I sell a product, I'm thinking like a t-shirt, a shirt. A shirt a man wears probably has a different fit than a woman's shirt. And if I try to sell everyone the same shirt, it's not going to fit right. So the messaging has to be like, here's this kind of shirt that is kind of loose and not totally comfortable for everyone. But if you're a man or a woman, you can wear this. Conversely, if I'm just selling to men, we'll say, I could say, oh, this is form fitted for a man. It has a wider shoulders and more narrow waist. It's perfectly fitted. That is a stronger message. So the more narrow the community is that we're trying to sell to or speak to, the more specific we can be in communicating to their needs. And then it resonates with them. As an author, when I wrote my books, while now I serve more and more small businesses on a broader scale, I didn't start that way. I spoke to a very small community and was there constantly presenting to them, getting them engaged. And once they were engaged, they started to carry me to more and more communities and industries, and I grew over time.
So did your environment has changed since then? You have understand that it is important to found a top target group?
Yeah. So for me, the environment I serve now changed. But the top target group I served for 3 to 4 years specifically, and I'll tell you who it was. So I think it's interesting. Initially, when I was writing my books, I thought it would be for male readers predominantly who were just leaving university and starting a business, because my first business was right out of university. But I noticed that the people who were engaging actually were female business owners who were entering the workforce after having children. So it was a whole different demographic. And there was a reason they were engaging. I didn't really understand it until I started to investigate it. But then I learned the way I share information from that book and the marketing around it, the messaging to a woman starting her first business after having children is a different message than a male starting a business right out of college. The risk a young male could take with no obligations is magnificent. They can try things out. If it fails, it doesn't matter. But the female entrepreneur who is starting her first business and raising children and supporting a family, you can't take those risks. You have to approach it differently. You have to start a business that brings in revenue quickly and consistently and grows over time. You can't expand too quickly. There can be consequences to that because it hurts your schedule. You may need more flexibility if you have young children on your availability. Those were all messages I learned to present. And that community started to respond by saying, wow, you're an author who's written a book that actually serves me. The way you communicate and tell me how to engage with this book is unique to me. And I started getting invited to these conferences. And the best part, and this is talk about different, I was the only guy showing up at these conferences. I was the speaker. And it's a little weird when you walk in and all these women look at you and go, who's this pervert here? Like, who's this guy? Right? I'm like, oh, I'm just the speaker. I'm just the speaker. And then I get on stage and everyone knew who I was. I was the only guy in the room. I was unforgettable in that context. And they started to embrace the messaging. And that community carried me on to the broader markets.
Q&A.
So, Mike, you also spend a lot of money. You spend all your money you got for the logo.
Great, great spend, right? I'm being ironic or facetious here.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny you read that part. So when I started my first business, I had saved roughly $2,000, maybe three. I can't remember. It was a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things, but it was all my money. And I said, to have a great business and to be recognized, I need to have a logo. No, what I found is not a single customer cares about a logo. My ego cared about, like, I have a logo, look at my company. No one cared. I would say some of my customers didn't even know my company name. They just knew Mike, the computer guy. And so they'd say, you know, Mike, I have used this guy, Mike, the computer guy. And that's how he referred to me. I spent $1,000 on getting a logo designed that didn't matter. I never used it. And no one knows what it is. That's a waste. What we need to do are things that engage customers immediately. So when we spend on marketing, what are the things we can do that a customer notices and says, oh, that's for me, and wants to engage? When I wrote Get Different, the book Get Different, it was all about doing something that disrupts the normal approach. Everyone has a logo. So if everyone has a logo doesn't matter. What can we do that no one else is doing? get the customer's attention. And then the customer, when they see us, say, oh my gosh, that's for me.
Yep.
That type of stuff is what we want to invest our dollars in, our euros in.
So I love to fail and get up fast.
How do you you're a good
that?
Man.
Yeah. So how do you see that?
Yeah. I hate to fail, but I do like to get up fast. I fail. Oh my gosh, do I fail a lot? And so what I try to do is what I call micro experiments. Mm. Try at the smallest level. What can I do to try something out? And if it works, I can do a little more of it and expand on that. And if it continues to work, I can invest more heavily in it. Or if it doesn't work, I can get away from it quickly with as little fiscal damage or, you know, financial damage or time. So I fail a lot. And I've never felt like, oh, that was fun to fail. But when I do fail, I try to abandon that approach with as little cost as possible. The challenge with marketing is most entrepreneurs I meet with, when they go into marketing, it's an all-in bet. Facebook's the hot thing here in the US, maybe in Europe too, but so many businesses say, oh, run Facebook ads, you'll make money. And they invest, you know, a good dollar into it. And when it's not working, the feedback is, oh, you haven't done enough yet. That is the biggest lie in marketing. If it's not working, doesn't mean you need to do more. We need to figure out why it's not working. And maybe we should try something else. So I try little experiments with little cost to see what gets a little bit of traction. And the things that don't, I pan out. And the things that do work, I amplify. And sometimes they grow, then they fail, and I abandon them. And I hone in on the thing that does work.
Become big.
At what time do you say all in?
It's usually when I have what's called statistical probability. Now, there's a couple of variants of this. Mm-hmm. I talked to a lot of statisticians, and they said, once you have a community, if you take a 10% sampling of that community, their behavior is likely indicative of the entire community. Mm-hmm. So if I have, say, 10,000 prospects, once I approach 1,000 prospects and most of them buy, that means of everyone else, most of them will buy. Mm-hmm. But that for a small business is pretty expensive to test out to 1,000. So the first test I do is, can we try 100 samples? It seems to be a minimal number, and it's not perfect science, but it gives a general direction. So for any prospect, a community I'm targeting, when I try a new marketing approach, I say, what can I do to invest as little as possible, but do it 100 times over? Mm-hmm. And once I hit that 100 times, I'll have a good sense of, is this a failure or is this a success or is it somewhere in between? Mm-hmm. Almost all the time, it's somewhere in between. And then I say, well, how do I modify it? Once I start having traction at that first 100, that's where I make my first decision. If it's a failure, I abandon it there. Once I start improving it, so once I get to 1,000, that's when I go all in.
Okay, thank you. Very good answer. So, Mike, what exactly is your secret of success and what would you provide for a small business owner?
I think the biggest determinant of success is how determined you are to have success. Meaning the biggest secret to success is the stick-to-itness, but not blinders. And that's what determination is. Determination, to me, doesn't mean persistently doing one thing. Mm-hmm. It means trying something, and if it's not working, continuing forward, but on a new path. Mm-hmm. There's a term from sailing boats. So when you sail a boat, you don't go in a straight line. So you don't put an X kind of out in that map of where you want to go and say, I'm going to go straight there. Instead, you have to capture the winds that are blowing by, or maybe other boats and obstacles you have to avoid. So what you do is you go for a short distance as best you can toward that destination. But after that short distance, you change the sails to capture the wind and you go a short distance again in a pattern that goes toward it, but it's a zig and then a zag and a zig and a zag. By doing this pattern, we inevitably get there. And this approach can be used in our business. We try to do it in 90-day, we actually do it in 90-day increments. Mm-hmm. And we have a small team here. There's 10 of us. And at the end of every quarter, which just ended as we're recording this, we sit down for a day and say, what worked? What didn't work? How can we adjust our sales to grab the changes that are going on? What potential obstacles are in the way? There may be a recession coming. It looks like it is. And we then adjust accordingly. One example of this is for speaking, I was actively speaking a lot until COVID happened. And then my speaking slowed down significantly. And we thought by now it'd ramp back up, and it is virtually, but the topic that is of most interest is about the pending recession and how to navigate around it. So last quarter we said, oh, let's develop a presentation using all the knowledge I've gained on how to manage a recession. And that topic now is my number one topic very quickly. That was a zig and then a zag, and it keeps us on our course of where we're going.
So it is very important not to lose the sight of the goal, yeah?
And right. Always know compass, where you want to go. That goal.
That's important. Focus.
That's always important. Yeah. I just don't think it's realistic to ever expect to get there in a straight line. So determination is requires us to change as we move toward that goal.
Yeah, I think this is a very good answer and a very good life hack for our listeners today. So, Mike, let's go to the last question today.
Sure.
Now, the question that many German speaker listeners are interested in is, so when can we expect the German version of your bestseller Get Different, and how do people connect to you and your office?
Yeah, so it's thank you for asking. It's going to be released in a year or two. Eins or zwei years, right? So we are in talks with the publisher in Deutschland, but it takes time.
Okay.
What they first do is they track the performance in the US and make sure it's achieving a predictable performance, similar to us, of how I measure marketing, and then see if they can, if it'll expand accordingly. And they've already reached out and said, it's performing well in the US. We'd love to have it in German. Unfortunately, it takes a year or two. So it is available for people that speak English, but unfortunately not available in Deutsch yet. If people want to learn about me specifically and maybe check out other resources, I have quite a few books in German. Mm-hmm. You can go to, I'll give you two choices. You can go to mikemikalowicz.com. That is so difficult to spell. I have come up with a shortcut. It's easy to remember. It's Mike Motorbike. So it rhymes and it's like a motorcycle, even though I've never driven one, but mikemotorbike.com. If you go there, that's my nickname. I'll bring you to my site and you'll see all the books I've written on about. And I also used to write for the Wall Street Journal here in the US. You can get those articles. Those are in English, but they may serve you, and you can surely translate them too using Google.
Oh, that's very great. And dear listeners, of course, we put everything in the show notes as always. Yeah. Dear listeners, nice that you tune on today. If you like the podcast, I would happy if you subscribe to the podcast for the next time. And this was another episode of Niggemann to Go. Dear Mike, that was a fantastic interview. And I'm sure our listeners will take away a hell of a lot. Yeah. So I had a lot of fun, and it was for me a great pleasure to have you in my podcast, Mike.
Thank you so much. Danke schön. Auf Wiedersehen.
Take care. Bye-bye, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Nach der Kaffeepause ist vor der Kaffeepause. Mehr frisch geröstete Unternehmenstipps bekommst du auf alexanderniggemann.de und natürlich in der nächsten Folge von Niggemann to go. Von der 5B-Strategie bis zur Kaffeemethode. Alles andere ist kalter Kaffee.